Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired and moody. I can tell it already.
A bit tired, a bit moody. But is everybody all right?
I'm pissed. Tired, moody and twatted.
You all right?
What's up with you?
Nothing, I'm all right.
Before we started, your posture, you were like a little sulking schoolboy.
Moody.
I'm a bit tired, like, but I'm all right mood-wise.
You were moody last week. So it's going round. You're up next.
I'm next. Pencil is in. Week Monday.
Tell you what's doing my tits in. Like, genuinely, we're not working enough.
Are you bored?
I'm like, I'm spending too much time at house.
Get a hobby, John.
Eh?
Get a hobby.
Weather, golf.
Look after one of my young'uns for the day.
Like indoors.
Eh?
Like miniature railway or something in attic.
Hornby. A Hornby set.
No, I can see your little hat going upstairs. Fat controller.
I need weather. Fat controller. No need, is there?
He knew what he was doing, didn't he?
I need weather to turn, you know, for golf.
Yeah, that's the game changer. Well,
we've established this previously. There's nothing stopping you playing golf if you dress for the occasion.
It is when it's got fucking snow on it.
Have you not been getting out walking?
Not bad knee, Anna.
How do you get buggy around the golf course?
Sometimes, but usually walk around the golf course, but then I can't move for the rest of the weekend. Play Thursday mornings, and I can't move till, well, Saturday night. Things start loosening up.
You're on the dance floor.
Club Tropicana.
McArthur.
Who?
McArthur this week.
Is that Harford with a T?
Hartford. Silent.
McArthur. Yeah. To be fair, like, I don't know what I were expecting, but he's not the same as what I were expecting.
Did you think he'd just be growling?
I'd come in and like headbutters and that.
All right, John.
One for old time's sake. You know what I mean?
I'm one of them.
But no, lovely, lovely man.
Brilliant, wasn't he?
Doubled up on the hard men.
Two and two. It's just like how calm he is when he's saying, like, telling stories. He's like, yeah, I won the header and I laid one on him. I won another header and I give him one.
Stood step
back. It's just like a given, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I tell you what I have noticed with... obviously, Borley, Mick, and Jason Leo's coming out soon. It's just so normal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I was saying to Chris, like, I think if, or no, I was saying to you that if it's a younger player and they're talking about laying one on people, you think, oh, maybe a bit of a
thug.
Dig. Yeah, but because it was of the times and everybody was at it, you accept it, don't you? As good game.
Like, did you ever get one off the ball?
Nah.
Not like a right hook off the ball.
Nah.
I don't think I did. Obviously, I got a little elbow in me ribs and stuff.
And that was enough to, like, get your rage and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
As simple as somebody standing on your foot or something.
A pinch.
Never mind a punch in the nose.
Yeah.
I used to like that one, you know, grab the underarm hairs and pull them.
Yeah.
You always cut one of them. And then,
ooh. I bet people are wondering as well who's got the stronger handshake. And there's only one winner on that front.
Yeah, Kevin Ball.
Vice-like.
Yeah, I know the drops of your knees.
Mick's hands.
Shovels.
Unbelievable, we're talking down here. Yeah. Like you're one wood.
We're talking gladiators, them things got gladiators, aren't we?
Unbelievable. I think I made it obvious that I looked as well.
Yeah, they were like cold shovels, weren't they?
Yeah, it were actually like, the game back then were just full of thugs, like, really, weren't it? And not and proper players as well. Like you're talking about Gary Pallister, Steve Bruce, players of that ilk. And they're all fucking laying one on him. Sam Allardyce.
Sam.
Big Sam.
Yeah, I don't think it's forgiven, Sam. I don't think it's forgiven, Sam.
I felt there was something behind the eyes there when he was talking about Sam sharpening his elbow.
Yeah.
But like, these are like proper well-known players, aren't they? Respected players in game. And they were like chinning people off the ball and stuff.
Brutes.
Like the ball's up there. Look at the linesman and Bosch.
It was a good trip though, wasn't it?
It was.
Tell you what, I don't know if you were surprised, Matty, as well. John's choice of sweets when we stopped off at garages.
I can't remember what they were, but were they?
I mean, what would you think? Like,
a Tony's chocolate bar or something, wouldn't you?
Yeah, Yorkie.
Fruitellas, Tutti Frutti's.
Tutti Frutti?
Jelly Tots.
Jelly Tots at work. Jelly Tots are right up there, by the way. Jelly Tots are lovely.
Jelly Tots. I don't know why that tickled us so much, but I didn't see anything at the time. But I thought,
do you like a pick and mix?
Pardon?
Do you like a pick and mix?
Oh, do I. Tell what my favourite, the old cables.
Yeah, but they're not good for getting a cup, them, are they?
Getting what?
Getting a cup.
Oh, you've got to bend them right round. Right,
slow procedure, winding them in the bottom.
Well, that's why you put one in the cup, one in your pocket.
Right before you buy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of pick and mix. I've been walking in, putting them on the scales at 20 quid with before.
Do you want more jelly based or chocolate based?
Oh, no, chocolate in. Not one bit of chocolate
in. I'm a sucker for the chocolate peanuts. And chocolate raisins.
See, I like them, but I don't want them melting on my jelly.
Yeah, they ruin it, in fact.
Yeah, it's got a bit, because when you put your hand in, obviously with the heat of your hand, especially if you're at the pictures on a date, your hand's been somewhere warm, hasn't it?
Somewhere clammy. You know, I don't like too much sugar either.
It's not worse.
If I can just talk about that one.
It's not worse than a fishy chocolate raisin in my
Jonathan.
Yeah.
What was your favourite story from Borley?
The Peter Reid one. The clicking of the studs coming down the tunnel. Exactly. I can picture it.
Obviously, I played at Grimsby, so I know exactly where he's on about. It is a very small dressing room and a very small gangway into it, isn't it?
It was the way he described the trophy from Ensley as well. It was a beautiful owl. Heavy, heavy. So I was in charge of an offensive weapon.
And driving to... got out of bed, got dressed, driving to Burnley.
To see Phil. Stan.
Yeah. But I bet with Stan.
Yeah, fucking mad.
The other good thing is the honour amongst the hard men. You know, on the field, kick the shit out of each other, shake hands, have a pint, end of game.
See, I don't think I could... You know, somebody's chinned me off the ball. I don't think I could have a pint with him after.
They're on the shit list, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't think I could have a pint with him after.
You're more of a Steve Walsh.
Yeah, I think, I'm obviously not a violent person, but if somebody chins me, I'm not leaving the ground until I've got one back or attempted to.
Mm. I'll tell you who's on my shit list.
Not again.
Luton, you've got again.
Filming in it, Jim.
Yeah, I'm going to go to gym in the morning. Kindness of my heart, I've got a guest pass. Oh, do you want to come? I put it out there. Went down, doing my bit. There is, I catch him again at corner with his phone.
You've not learned your lesson, though, have you, from Qatar?
We need to put the video up. It was an interesting technique, wasn't it, John?
Honestly, he's doing arms, but it's probably more back. It's the old...
The full-body tricep dip.
Yeah, it's like it's the too heavy for you. That's why you've got to keep your core switched on.
Listen,
you need a firm base, and then that's when you're working your
arms. Do it your own way.
You're working your back. No.
And then we sat down having a bit of breakfast, and I'm talking to him saying, yeah, but, you know, unless I change my diet, you know, I can't lose anything. And he's just giving me nothing below surface. He's just like, yeah. And then he goes upstairs showing you, have a look at this, rather than giving something back. You know what I mean? Just give a bit back. Something a bit below surface level.
I'll be honest with you, right? At the minute, you don't need, like in Qatar, you needed to lose some weight because you were fat, right? They were a muffin top, weren't they, in Qatar? Like, awful. An airy muffin top, right? But at the minute, you know, I don't think you need to lose any weight.
I think you know what you need
to do.
You're it's just
now.
Discipline.
Yeah, I think I'm not talking to you away from this situation.
What did you want from us?
Nothing.
Like a diet plan or?
Just a bit of something back, you know.
Chris Wicks.
Yeah. Just a bit of something back. Like, then,
I'll do you a programme if you want.
But give him plenty of tips and hints to John about how shit it was.
But remember, in Qatar, we did a workout together and you... Down tools halfway through.
That was just ridiculous.
Once bitten, twice shy.
That was just ridiculous. You're out now, Chris. It's a long way back.
But we'll try and imagine.
We'll try and get the video. There was the tricep.
We won't, though, will we? We're not.
What is that working? What is that?
Total body workout.
And there's this one when it's
all in one. You want to see me back? I'm like a bull.
It's too heavy.
Is that?
You rumbled us on the second one, didn't you? I just saw him look like, you fucker.
I'm glad you didn't wet me up to go to the gym, by the way. Thanks for that.
He only had one guest pass, didn't he?
Oh, there's always something, isn't there? Always something.
You been watching much? John?
Of?
TV?
Not since Happy Valley.
No?
No, I finished Happy Valley in about 6 days and then...
Not been using your VPN?
No, I've not actually.
You can get the next series on there.
Yeah.
What series?
They've not even made it yet.
Oh, fucking hell. It's Colombian.
It's good. Colombia.
Colombia, they all got big there. Fucking Sarah Lancaster's grown a tash. She's got a gun in an holster.
Well, no massive thanks to No VPN for sponsoring this episode, as always. If you don't know what the VPN service is, you can bench your location to anywhere in the world and watch the programmes that you want to watch. There's matches abroad, you can get on them. And not just that, your security. Bank details, passwords, addresses, all under lock and key.
Can't be too safe, can you, Chris?
No. Oh, no. So, and there's a link in the description.
Can you still, sorry to interrupt, can you still get the cheaper streaming services?
Cheaper streaming services, yeah. So
you're speculating to accumulate, really, aren't you?
Yeah, you're paying for your streaming services over here, you're getting cheaper with your VPN. Just say you're somewhere else.
What have we got? Is it just a heavy discount?
Heavy discount. All you're going to do, click on that link below.
Hey, is it there? Want to buy a donkey?
Yeah, links in the description on the video and the audio, www.novpn.com/kosh, and you'll get that heavy, heavy discount.
It's heavier than them dumbbells you were trying to lift on Monday.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that heavy.
Jesus Christ. It's not even, if they're that heavy, it's free and you get a fiver a month from them. That's how heavy them dumbbells were.
Should we get Mick in then?
Yep.
So we, I know we mentioned it on the Patreon, but Chris fucked up again with a name. Probably the... One of the biggest guests that we've never had on.
Most often mentioned as well. I mean, I'm still not 100% with it.
Billy Whitehouse.
Let's get him in then.
Go on.
Messaged Kevin Ball just to let him know that we had you on, and his response was, "He is a class bloke. Punched me right in the mouth in a game once. I elbowed him in the head next chance I got, and he went down. But he never stayed there. At the end of the game, he shook my hand, said thank you. He really enjoyed the game. Sign of a proper man. I've loved him ever since that day."
That's very kind of Ball. He's a good friend of mine. Obviously, a Sunderland legend, and I do remember the game, to be honest with you.
Do you remember the punch?
Yeah, I'll come to that in a minute. I think it was Derby at Sunderland. Derby played Sunderland at the baseball ground. And I think Rob Ironmarsh was playing. And Rob, God rest his soul, he left one on me, right behind me. He left one on me. First couple of minutes, as he used to do in those days. And the first lad I come across was Bowley. And I thought, well, I'm going to hit him. So I whacked Bowley. Never really caught him properly. Then later on in the game, I run across a boy called Paul Hardiman. And as I'm running across, I'm still fuming about being whacked and all that. I just caught him with my elbow and he's gone down and his mayhem went off and all that, you know. But yeah, I do remember that. Bowley, he's a proper man, Bowley. A proper man, proper captain and a proper Sunderland legend. And it's
strangely the parallels between the two of you. The fact that you both kind of went opposite directions. Him coming from down south to be a Sunderland legend, and you coming down here, both similar playing styles.
Yeah, a lot of irony in that. Yeah. It's, I came down here, I'm not sure what year it was, maybe 80, 81, and stayed here ever since. Really like it down here, family down here. And Bowley went up there, became a proper legend. I know he's still living up there and still had good connection with the football club, I think. So now we keep in touch, to be fair.
Were you a proper Sunderland fan growing up? Because did you stick hitchhike to games? Is that
I played through the school system, went to play for Sunderland boys, played through all the systems and got to a certain age where they never took you on. I got about 14, 15 and I just packed in playing. It was my dream to play for Sunderland. Then I just went all around the country following Sunderland. Me and my mates used to be in a pub. I used to let me in a pub called The Prospect, because he used to play for them on a Sunday morning, and I'd go in there on a Friday night, would come out walk across the road because I was on the main road out of Sunderland and start hitchhiking the games. Go to Notts County, Norwich. Used to travel all over the country, two or three of us. If you could get two in the car, two would get in the car and leave one, or vice versa.
You always get in.
But we'd always end up in where we wanted to be, always ended up at the game.
Yeah.
And what we used to do, we used to jump on the coaches on the way back. That was my... Then after about 2 years of doing that, someone knocked on my door, a good mate of mine, was a manager of a club called Lambton Street Boys Club. He knocked on my door, he said, "Mick, do you want to play for Lambton Street Boys?" He said, "We'll give you 50p a go." I said, "Okay then." So I went and played and I started my football career again.
I remember that prospect. That was a throwback. Prospect. £5 in all you can fight, innit?
Yeah, you could. They probably wouldn't let you in.
Rough as hell.
Probably wouldn't let you in.
Hey. That were your fucking blonde highlights.
Blonde highlights. You had to have a broken nose to get in there.
Oh, yeah, brilliant, yeah. Wasn't a problem.
You know, on that, because we ask everybody about... Within your generation, you know, who's the hardest player you've played against? And there's three names that come up all the time, isn't there? Bawley, Billy Whitehouse, and yourself.
Whitehurst.
Say again?
Billy Whitehurst.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
It's fucking crap.
You said Whitehouse.
It's fucking crap, in by the way. Yeah. It is, it's crap.
You haven't got off to a good start.
Sorry, Chris.
Did it ever annoy you at all that, you know, because you could play a bit as well, it overshadows, you're always regarded as an hard man rather than all the goals that you scored?
I say it all the time. It's, you know, we all have strengths and weaknesses and that. You know, you've got big, strapping lads who are not very brave, who won't do things. I wasn't... Listen, there's always someone out there who's harder than you. I totally know that. And I mean, you never get a face like this by playing 1-2s on the edge of your own box. That's the way I look at it. I wasn't hard. I was brave. I'd go in places where other people wouldn't go into. I'd stick my head in there and you get knocks and bruises. But hard, I mean, it's sometimes it works in your favour when your reputation and that helps you away, and certain players you play against and they think, "Oh, fucking hell, Mick Splinter there," and all that, you know. It does help you at times, that reputation. But I would say I was more brave than hard.
When was it that you end up being a target man and thought, "I need to use my physique"? And
well, I went to Lincoln, and that after about 6 months, I went there as a midfield player. And after about 6 months, Colin Murphy said, "Look, we're going to play up front." We all know back to goal is a really tough place to play, so it took me a long time to develop and all that. Now playing back to goal, you're the only person who looks the wrong way on the football pitch, and it's really hard understanding who's behind you and where everyone is. But I got the hang of it quite quickly. My touch was all right. I had decent touch. Technique was all right. So it was down to Colin Murphy, basically, and Lincoln City.
I don't know about you, Perriers, but I was in denial because I was tall, but I used to think I was a bit of a player. At a young, like, say, 15, 16, I used to think, "No, I don't want to be a target man. I've got more to offer." But it was Mick McCarthy who used to say, "You're fucking 6'4". This is what you need to be doing. Yeah. This is how you'll get a career in the game. Use your body."
He has proved that you were just a fucking target.
But you know what? That's exactly rung a bell. Like, I never used to think I was a target man until Mick was kicking us up a height and saying, "This is the way to go."
Oh, it takes a long time to hone your skills to be a centre forward. You know, you don't mature till a really good age. I think being a centre forward took me a long, long time to get the hang of it. And you know what, the ball goes up to you, breaks down, everyone's moaning at you. Fucking get hold of it, will you? We can't get up the pitch and stuff like that. It's a tough position to play. But obviously you get the rewards by scoring the goals and getting the chances and getting the opportunities and getting all the glory.
That's something else you didn't do fucking much on, to be honest with you.
I was talking about myself.
So do you know when you got in the Lincoln first team, and people are starting to lay one on you, at what point did you think, "I'm going to have to start doing this back"? Because as a young pup, I'm sure if you get, not bullied, but you'd think, "Fucking, I can't really do that." Well, there a point where you thought, "I need to start fucking chinning, folk"?
Absolutely, John. There was an instance against Scunthorpe United in a pre-season friendly. I never forget it. And I made a run across the centre-half, which... And I mean, when you're young, you could run a bit across. And I made a run across the centre-half And Bosch, the next thing I knew, I was on the touchline. I woke up, the physio came on, and I just come round as the physio got to me. I just come round. He went, Bert Loxley's name was, I never forgot him. And he went, all right, mate, come on, you're coming off soon. I said, what's the matter? He said, no, I'm all right, I'm okay. He said, no, you're coming off. He said, no, off. I said, no, I'm all right, Bert. Anyway, they got me up the tunnel in the dressing room, which is down there. I looked in the mirror, my nose was flattened all over the place and all that. And that was the exact time I thought, ooh, I need to start looking after myself here.
And this is a pre-season game?
Yeah, pre-season game, yeah. Yeah, I don't know who the centre-half was, but that was the first when I thought, hello, you've got to start looking after yourself here, or you'll be in trouble.
And does looking after yourself mean getting one in first?
Just being clever and all that. No, you listen, you don't go on a football pitch to really harm someone or do them damage, but you've got to look after yourself. You've got to get your body in the right position. You've got to be, you've got to stop and come through the back of you. You've got to get your arms up when you're challenging for balls in the air. You know, the natural thing is to throw your arms in there, and you might throw the odd elbow now and again just to let them know you're there and things like that, you know? So it's just about protecting yourself, really. Yeah.
It was always just strictly business for you. As soon as you come off the pitch, game's done. You'll have a pint afterwards.
Shake hands.
Game's really done, yeah. I remember we were playing Arsenal out here one day at Kenilworth Road, and I rang my best mate who was playing for Watford, Tony Coton. I said, Tony, I said, we got Arsenal tomorrow. You want to come? He went, I'll leave a couple of tickets on for you. I said, I'm not sure about that, Mick, and all that, getting into Kenilworth Road and stuff and all. I said, look, playing Arsenal, David O'Leary's playing. He went, is he? I went, I said, I'll come down and watch that then. So he turned up and all that, you know, and David was a magnificent footballer and all that, you know, but that evening, I don't know what happened and all that, you know, but I threw a few elbows and knocked him about a little bit, and as you do, and you got on top of him and you got the better of him. And I think we beat them 2-0 that night. And after the game, I said to Tony, I'll see you in the bar after the game. So we go in the bar, and David O'Leary was in the far corner of the bar. So I've gone in, I said, all right, Dave, how are you? He said, do you want a drink? Do you want a pint? And he looked at me, he went, no, I'm all right, Mick. I'm all right, thanks. I said, come and have a drink with us and all that. Come on. So he come over, had a pint and all that, you know, and that's the way it was in those days. You know, it was a battle, it was a scrap, and intimidation helped your team in those days, and it was an intimidating place in those days on a football pitch, I believe.
Were there any times where you thought, right, he's got me here, and I've not had a chance to get him back?
Next time
we play against him.
There's the best player I ever played against, and it's probably the strongest and the hardest. I mean, people always ask me the question, who's the best player you played against? And there's lots of them, you know, Hanson, Lawrenson and Alvin Martin, Kevin McDonald at QPR, lots of really good centre-halves, Gary Pallister, Steve Bruce, all of them good players and all that. But the best for me was Paul McGrath, and he did me out of gun proper. And no messing about, just a really quiet, silent one where just Bosch, the ball's coming down, he leaves one, gives you a dead leg and out for 2 or 3 weeks with dead leg, and he was like a silent assassin. Wonderful footballer, absolutely wonderful footballer. Paul was probably the best and the hardest player I ever come across.
Did you get him back?
I didn't get him back, and obviously there's a famous one where Sam Allardyce did me good and proper, and he cut my lip here, and I was in hospital for about 4 days with 100 stitches. Sam got me against Birmingham, who were playing Coventry. And I've turned to run over the top, and he's laid one on me, an elbow. And I woke up in hospital and had an operation. And about 2 years later, we played Huddersfield out there in the FA Cup. And Sam was playing for Huddersfield then. And I did my best to try and get him back. I threw a few elbows and all that. And now he started moaning at the referee. Yeah, he's trying to get me. He's having a go at me because what I did to him and all that. Anyway, I've gone Bosch and I've hit him. And I just saw a little trickle of blood come down there. And I thought, oh, that'll do. We'll call it quits.
That'll do.
That'll do. I'll call it.
It actually sounds outrageous, yeah, doesn't it? Yeah.
That'll do. I'll call it. Because I said, I'll have it. Hey, man, you get sent off. So, and we'll call it quits. It means Sam, get on well now. one of those things, you know.
You mentioned Tony Coton there. His best mate, isn't he?
Is he Tony's my best friend, yeah.
Was there a time when, I don't know if you were playing for Luton and while he was at Watford, and you went down to meet him for a pint in a Watford pub?
Yeah, I do remember, yeah. There's a couple of things there with TC about Watford. We played Watford on the Saturday, and I rang him up the night before. I said, turn to my ass, I'm going to score a goal and I'm going to break your nose. So I said to him, yeah. He said, I know. I said, yeah. He said,
by the way, is the family all right?
Yeah. That was the missus and all that, yeah. So I'm going to score a goal and I'm going to break your nose. And we had a laugh and a giggle anyway. I caught him and I cut his eye. And you'll not believe this, I scored a hat trick. And the one about Tony. Tony rang me and he just signed for Watford, and the England boys were staying in Luton because he used to fly out to Luton for the internationals. So we were in this pub in Hemel Hempstead, sit down having a drink and all that, and have a few beers, and it come to the end of the night, and the barman said, the landlord said, yeah, stay over, have a couple of beers. So there was about 30 people in the bar, so a few of the England boys were there and all that now. So anyway, Tony went to the toilet about 20 yards down there. And as he turned around there, I could see it was someone like moving in towards him and trying to stick the nut on him and all like that. So he's gone to the toilet, he's come back out, and one of them's laid a punch on him. So I've ran down the end of the bar, and me and Tom got stuck into these lads and all like that. Laid a couple of them out, a few punches thrown around and all that. Anyway, I've walked back up to the bar and I said to the barman, I said, pint of lager, mate. And he pulled like, you know, what they use for the kung fu with the
nunchucks.
The nunchucks. Is that what it is? He's pulled the nunchucks up and he's gone whack, and he's hit me right over the head, right over the back of the head. I still feel the scar now. And I've got, whoa. And anyway, so I've ran behind the bar and after him. He's run upstairs and all that. he's run up the stairs out of the way. And I've come back behind the bar, said, Tony, to go to the hospital. So I went down to the hospital and got stitched up and just went out. So that was a night out with TC, yeah.
What are you offended that you asked for a pint?
I've got no idea. We actually, believe it or not, got the cab from the hospital and went back to that pub to see if that lad we knocked out was all right.
Can I get a pint of lager, please? No, but you can have that.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Unbelievable.
When did you first meet Tony at Birmingham?
Tony was goalkeeper for Birmingham, yeah. And he just broke into the team when I signed for Birmingham, yeah.
Was that your first introduction to top-flight football at Birmingham?
It was. I went from Newcastle to Bristol City, then to Birmingham. Ron Saunders was the manager. That was my first introduction to the top flight, yeah.
When you first went in, were you apprehensive about the step up in standard?
It was really weird because, I don't know, it's really strange how you actually get to be signed for Birmingham. I was playing for Bristol City and we played Aston Villa in the Cup and we lost 1-0, but that was when they were European champions, Aston Villa. We lost 1-0 and Ron Saunders was the manager and I played really well. So Ron then went to Birmingham. He became the manager then. I was his first signing. Yeah, it's intimidating. It is a big step up. Obviously, the step ups, I believe, now is a lot wider now, but the step up was still good. I went there and there was a couple of mates of mine who I played with. So, and I knew Alan Kirbisley, I knew Kevin Dillon.
Yeah.
So the introduction was a lot easier. And the big thing about me for playing football was I just wanted to be successful. That's all. I wouldn't worry about the money or how much I got wages wise. I just wanted to be a good player. And I think what I wanted to do, every club I wanted to prove to the players that I was playing with that I was a good player. And I was a real, real good trainer and I loved training. So, and I got off to a real good start the following, on the Saturday. We beat Brighton 1-0. I scored and I got off to a good start. So that helps the process.
Yeah. As you mentioned then about the money, is it right you moved from the Championship as it is now to the Premier League on less money?
I know when I was at Bristol City and I went to Birmingham, it was more or less the same. With signing on fees at Bristol, it was probably less, yeah. It was all about
wouldn't
playing
happen now, would
day
it?
On. Pardon?
Imagine that happening now. Getting a move to the Premier League.
Getting less than...
Yeah.
And that's why I never make an agent.
To be fair, though, like you say, you know, when your players will play in the Championship and then move up to the Prem, they say it's not as physical and all that, but with the names that you've spoke about who are in the Premier League, it was just a fucking battle still in as much in that league as what it would have been in the Championship.
Yeah, I think the game has changed now. Obviously, the all that technology now, and I wouldn't say they're fitter. I mean, the pitches we had to run up and down on week in, week out weren't great, and you had to be fit, you had to be strong, and you had to be durable. And I think we were probably more durable footballers, but probably not as more athletic.
Mm. What happened at Villa Park when you got beat 1-0? Can you remember?
Oh, for Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it kicked off where we were losing 1-0, and Noel Blake missed the penalty. And that set things on the off and all that. You know, and it all kicked off. I think Blakey got stuck into Steve McMahon, and it all kicked off. Peter Witt was playing, and Ken McNaught, I'm not sure it was Ken, or he's come through the back of me, and it all kicked off. The pitch was really wet, a local derby, Villa Birmingham, and it just carried on off into the dressing room, and we walked up the stairs and all that, and that Colin Gibson ran up the stairs and ran in the dressing room, and he shouted something at me. So I followed him in the dressing room, and I was chasing him around the dressing room. All the Villa boys just sat down. All the Villa boys sat
down.
I'm chasing them around. It was a bit like Benny Hill and all that. And anyway, one of the lads just come out and grabbed me out of there and all that. You know, it was a lot of pushing and shoving. But, yeah, a big rivalry in those days, Villa-Birmingham, massive, and still is.
Still is,
Still is massive. But there was a real, like, desire to always want to beat them, and the rivalry was really intense. And I mean, you went out on a Saturday night and bumped into a few of the lads, and there'd be a bit of pushing and shoving and all that, you know. And
the players or the fans?
Yeah, the players. Down at Liberty's on a Saturday night in Birmingham.
I could just imagine, you know, the initial ripples of it's going to kick off. I can just imagine teammates just seeing it and just like, Mick, you're up.
Yeah.
Look, just checking your where is it? Can I swing one?
I hope he's not gone for a piss. Yes, he's here. So by this time at Birmingham, have you got the reputation of being a hard man throughout football?
Oh, that's a good question, because I don't know when that reputation came in. I think the question you asked earlier was about when did you start protecting yourself? Mm. Now, when I got caught by Sam on that day, and it more or less finished my career at Birmingham, because Big Ron said to me, he said, I played about 3 or 4 weeks later, and after about 2 months, he said, Mick, you're not the same player. And I wasn't. I wasn't the same player. I wasn't diving into things and stuff and all that, you know. And he said to me, maybe we'll let you go. I said, whatever you want to do, Ron, you know, you're the boss and all that, you know. And So I eventually left Birmingham because of not really looking after myself in terms of the physical side of it, and taking that whack was the end of my career at Birmingham.
What, you think you felt like you kind of started backing off from that bravery?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So when did that come back again?
Well, it soon comes back. You know, I mean, there was always a fear of getting whacked in and around the face and on the mouth, and it was always painful. But I would say when I came back to Luton again, you had to. There were some really good players there when I came here, real top players at Luton, and again you had to prove yourself. You know, when I signed for Luton, you're looking at Brian Steen, Mal Donaghy, Steve Foster, Ashley Grimes, Les Seeley. I mean, some young players: Mitchell Thomas, Tim Breaker, David Priest, Gary Parker. I mean, in there, there's 6 or 7 international footballers. So you're coming in and you've got to prove yourself again.
Yeah.
And that was my process of trying to prove myself again. And if I had to be more physical, then I had to be more physical.
How much of a step down was it back then, signing from Birmingham to Luton?
That's a tricky question, because I believe Luton is as big a club as anyone, in my opinion.
What about the leagues then? Was it... No, in the same league.
Yeah. Same league, yeah.
Luton are mid-table.
Luton was struggling at the time. I didn't see it as a step down. No way. Our aim was to stay up and kick on. And we did that. We did stay up that season. And but to say it was a step down, I wouldn't say so, because I believed at that time Luton had better players than Birmingham, and I was playing with at Birmingham.
Sidestep. Are you stepping up?
This is a club I love, and I would never say anything bad about it. Or is a bigger club, but no, it's a club I really cherish, and I loved playing for. I didn't know it was going to turn out the way it did when I signed for Luton, but it did, and it worked out really well for me over the years. And it holds a big place in my heart, Luton Town Football Club.
Did you hit the ground running?
The first game was Leicester away. We drew 2-2, I scored, and I whacked someone on that day.
So you got a brace,
you got a brace. Yeah, so I caught someone. Because in those days, you know, it was like we played back to front a lot more, goalkeepers kick balls forward. And I said to Brian was sat next to me, I said, Brian, the first two or three challenges, let me deal with that and all that now. So the ball's come up, I won a header, then caught someone. And Brian got in on the first one and nearly scored. Second one, I've gone up and I've caught someone and I didn't mean to do it, and he's on the floor. And just, that was a good start for me.
It's almost like it goes hand in hand. And then I won the header and I caught someone.
then I got a late equaliser and we drew 2-2 up there. So I got off to a decent start, yeah.
Obviously, 7 years as a player overall at the club, I think four of those, you were top goal scorer. Mm. Is there anything that you can put your finger on at why Luton, for you, you settled in so well?
We had good players. We had real good players. We had a style of play. Pleatley was our manager to begin with, and we played quite expansive football.
Where does the Luton-Watford derby rank?
Oh, definitely up there, in my opinion, and especially for the fans. I mean, does it rank with the Sunderland-Newcastle? Does it rank with the Man U, Liverpool, Man U, Man City? Not sure it's that big, but locally the rivalry is intense and massive. And I mean, there's a big rivalry between the clubs, definitely 100%. And the bragging rights are always in the open and desperate for us to win them. You know,
I feel like we need to mention the best fridge in the Football League, best manager's fridge in the Football League, Neck Oil.
We are in the manager's office. You're privileged, boys, in the manager's office. And we always say we've got the best selection of beers in the league, yeah.
They're right up there.
Yeah, they're definitely right up there. And I'll be empty of that fridge by the time.
We're going to stop now.
The second race is starting in 5 minutes as well.
You said you were a really good trainer. Would you leave it on the lads in training?
Not so much. I mean, No, not really, no. It was
not what Don Goodman said, I'll be honest with you.
No, it was a respect in that. a bit of respect. No, I just think we've all been there, we've all done it. I used to train the way I played. I mean, if I had to make a challenge, I would make a challenge. We trained really hard, and I trained with a nice intensity. And whichever club I've coached out, whatever, I've tried to have that intensity in training. And I don't mind someone having a whack and getting a whack and all that, you know, and taking it, not just from me, from other people. You've got to be brave. You're going to take whacks. I'm not sure it's the same nowadays.
No, can't imagine it is. I can imagine just like, you know, when the manager's naming the team for the five sides, thank fuck I'm on mixed team. I mean, thank fuck.
Which manager got the best out of you and how?
Well, I think the best way to get the best out of players is by playing them. I was fortunate enough to, I said to John earlier, I was fortunate enough to, I got picked quite regularly and I never really got dropped and all that. You know, so I never really had any run-ins with managers down the years. But certain managers did get the best out of me. Obviously, Ron Saunders was a big influence in my career when I went to Birmingham. He was brilliant. He was a old-fashioned centre-forward who looked after himself, backed in. You could tell the bruises he had and his nose was broken, and he'd just give you little dittos about how to play centre-forward and what to do, not what to do. And he starts telling you about the flight of the ball and judging the flight of the ball and the trajectory of the ball coming in from all angles. Just little things like that, you know. And so I know he was brilliant for me, Ron Saunders. Absolutely brilliant.
What were you like before a game in terms of getting up for it?
Because that's the same. What, did you need any G'ing up or?
Because Bolly used to bang. Remember, he used to just bang on the wall once, and then that would get him and everybody. The door won it. Yeah,
the door. Yeah. No. It's. I wasn't a ranting and raving in the dressing room. Just nice and calm. And I mean, I like to do certain things before the game, a few press ups and stuff and all that, you know, and see little things like that and feel strong and feel solid. But I wouldn't say I was a ranter and raver, a banger on the door and just G'ing all the lads up and trying to encourage them to be to be strong and confident and go out there and enjoy yourself and just have a good day, really.
Just hang it up.
Hang it up, yeah.
Just hang it up and let me do the rest.
Stick it in there, yeah.
Tunnel intimidation, were you ever a fan of?
Yeah, we enjoyed it, especially, especially at Wimbledon, yeah. Lots of tunnel intimidation. I remember we played, this was on the way off, funny enough. I remember we played Blackburn when I was at Wimbledon there. We had the year Blackburn won the title and we were 4-0 down. And Tim Sherwood was saying, don't get bored, lads, don't get bored, lads. And I went, fucking, is he all right? So I said to Joan, I said, Joan, you heard him? He went, I've heard him, don't worry about that. So on the way off, we got stuck in them on the way off and Bosch and all that. And
is that Vinnie Jones?
Kicked off, yeah, with Vin and all that. And all kicked off. It was a big, big hoorah, big fight in the tunnel and all that. Anyway, we eventually get in the dressing room and Joe's there waiting for us, Joe Kinnear. Great manager, Joe, great man, top bloke, and one of the best managers ever played for, albeit it wasn't a long period. So you sit down and we've all been there and Joe's walking up and down the dressing room and for 3 or 4 minutes, never says a word, dressing room silent. And as he's walking along, he's getting loads of strapmans on the back of his shoes and all that, you know, and picking up all kinds of stuff on his shoes. He's turned to me and he went, how many fucking shots you had today? I went, none, gaffer. He said, you call yourself centre forward? Call yourself centre forward? And I went, I said, yeah, and he moved on to the next one. He turned to Vinny and Vinny, you went there, strong in the tunnel, ain't you? Brave in the tunnel, you are now. Hey, you're right in the tunnel when it's kicking off and all that now. What about on the pitch and all that now? So he's start nailing everyone. And he's picked on the biggest one, Vinny as well. You know, so he hasn't gone for the small fry and all that now. So he's picked on the big one. So after about half an hour, he's nailed everyone. He's gone around the dressing room, nailed a lot of them. You go, yeah, well, you're right and all that now. And he's gone, right, Monday morning, here, there'll be two Spaniards, two Norwegians, and a Frenchman here. You're a lot of fucking useless. Get home. We all walked out, all got changed, got in the shower and all that, and they said, oh, two Frenchmen and a Norwegian and all that, you know. Anyway, we got in there, went in the bar, had a couple of beers, and off you go. Come in Monday morning, straight in the train and pitch. You go, Gaffer, where's those Norwegians and those Frenchmen? You go, fuck off, you lot, and all that. Hey. Go fuck off. You was brilliant. Then start again, week start, next week, win, everything's back to normal. brilliant manager, absolutely brilliant.
Were you going back to Wimbledon? Were you the only player never to do initiation?
Yeah, I spoke to Vin, I said, Vin, dodge your back and all that, make sure they look after me and all that. They did get my room, they did do my room on the first away trip. They turned my room over, but they never. There's normally something physical and all that.
I was going to say, like, we've had singing and stuff, but. Yeah. What was a typical initiation?
I don't know, they'd strip you down and put you in the water on the. Because we used to train in Wimbledon Common. There used to be a lake on there, and I'd strip you down and throw you in there. I said, down and make sure they don't strip me off and all that. My back ain't great. Hey. But they did my went, so you go away on the next trip and they turn your room over and everything, you know? They did Johnny Arton's clothes, they burnt them.
Is that what you're saying?
Out the window, yeah. Oh, all kinds of stuff, yeah.
I only knew you could just ask beforehand not to do it.
I think back's a bit iffy.
Can you just not strip me down a minute?
Vin was in total control of the dressing room. He was a brilliant captain. I love playing with Vin, really good captain. Good guy, and a good captain, a massive leader.
Did he not get enough credit for how good a footballer he were?
Vin was a real good footballer, and I tell you what, he would, every afternoon or after training, it'd be me and him would be out there with the young lads on Wimbledon Common, crossing and finishing, and he absolutely was passionate about football. He loved it, he trained hard. Technique, absolutely first class. If you put a cross-country session or a running session, he'd be at the front. He'd win all the running. He just struggled a little bit when the ball was at one side of him, where a little bit of mobility, but technically he was a real, real good player. Both boxes, head in, fantastic, brave. Both boxes, if you want him to defend a corner, he'll get his head on it. And overall, just a real, real good captain.
I bet that changing room could just manage itself, that Wimbledon one.
No, Vinny managed the changing room. And he wouldn't have anything said about the club. You know, if you said anything about the club or the crazy gang, whatever, anything detrimental, he's nearly on the Monday. I've seen him having people pinned up against the wall and all that, you know, about saying things detrimental about the club. I think Warren Barton said something in the paper, newspaper, and we were on the way in on the Monday morning. So I'm going to nail him when I get in. I said, what's he said? He went, read that. He said something detrimental. I don't know what it was. And he had Warren pinned up against the wall. And I'm going, oh, here we go.
Yet another profitable weekend.
Back in the money.
Super Sunday I had.
Oh, so not on our league. Did we have a league? We did, didn't mm-hmm. we? I think I joined the wrong league.
Yeah, you did, John.
So point system is null and void.
We'll have a tot up, don't you worry. Massive thanks to BetMate for sponsoring the series once again. And we're getting right into it, aren't we? Have you not?
Me and you are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm into it. I just got the wrong league.
Because we did the prediction. We did the predictions leagues this week, and we've got Fantasy League coming up again this week coming.
That's my favourite. International, because we'll get the international weekend.
I'm even more screwed now then.
Yeah, because international weekend's a crap. Bit of a damp squid. Yeah. In it.
I am screwed. I don't know who played for Latvia and that.
Well, we've got England, Italy.
Oh, I've half a chance with England
too. Ukraine.
Yes.
You can pick a maximum of 6 players from each nation. We've got what? Interceptions.
Tackles.
Cards, goals, tackles, saves.
Look heavily into tackles. Who's going to make tackles? Fullbacks, centre midfielders. Yeah.
Definitely with Roberto Baggio up front with Toto Scilacci.
So we've got the link in the description for the BetMate app, and if you put in UTC5, you get a free fiver. So if you're not already involved, you can join for nothing, and it's minimum stakes as well, isn't it? That's an important thing for us.
Yeah, there's leagues, stakes, just for £1, entries £2, yeah. But £5 max.
Up to £5, and so it's just a bit of fun. It's nothing silly.
Got to be 18 and over.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
And please gamble responsibly.
But this is getting serious now, John. You need to pull your finger out.
What they call that centre half? Tall spinner half, half bald head.
Terry Butcher.
No, you pill it for Italy.
Chiellini.
That's him. He's in.
Guaranteed they'll be booked.
Well, while we're just talking about Wimbledon, when they came in for you, was it, obviously they built the reputation of the crazy gang and everything by then. Were you just, was it a rub of the hand?
Seemed like a match made in heaven, yeah. Didn't it?
Oh, it was, I mean, I hadn't played for about 9 months. I got injured. I did my back at Coventry. I played one game there and I hadn't played for 9 months. And I was just getting back fit. And Vin rang me, he said, oh, Joe's been on. The fridge, we used to call him the fridge. Joe, that was his nickname, the fridge. You know, the fridge, the old basketball player.
American
football, yeah. That was his nickname, the fridge. He said, Mick, the fridge has been on. He said, what is it? He went, oh, he's going to sign Lee Chapman. And I said, oh, Lee Chapman. He said, and I told him not to sign him. I told him to sign you. I went, okay, he wants to meet you. I said, okay. So I went and met him in Watford, in Hilton. Sat there, we'd had a done deal within 10, 15 minutes. I was at Coventry, same wages, a little bit of signing on fee. Weren't about the money, as we spoke about earlier. Just signing on fee and in you go and off you go. And it was brilliant. I absolutely loved my time at Wimbledon. Absolutely loved it. So I was thankful for Vinny for getting me to Wimbledon, because he said, nah, to Joe, sign Mick, don't sign him. Sign Mick, he'll be better suited for us and all that now. And, Who knows? But I had a great time there.
Just going back to Luton, obviously, 88, the cup final must have been the highlight of your playing career, well, with your England caps as well. Special day.
I just did, Andy Dibbles just messaged saying, top class is Mick, Wembley 88, Luton 3, Arsenal 2. Best ever League Cup final.
It was one of the highlights of my career. It was a real good season, that season we had. And I'll talk you through it. We got to there was a centenary tournament on at Wembley, so we played in that that year. So we had one appearance at Wembley and we got knocked out first round against Man United. Then we got to the semi-final of the FA Cup that season. We lost to Wimbledon. We got to the Simord Cup final and we lost 4-1 to Reading. Then we also got to the final of the League Cup, We're a really good cup team, Luton. And we got the final of the League Cup against Arsenal. And when we lost at White Hart Lane to Wimbledon, Ray Half was our manager, and he pulled us, he sat us down, and he said, look, he said, you've worked so hard this season to get where you are. We were already in the cup final. He said, you just cannot throw it away, you know, you cannot throw it away. You deserve a trophy. And those words still ring in my ear now. And then we put a concerted effort in to try and win that cup final, obviously. And Dibs, who just texted you, said it was one of the best cup finals ever. I mean, I went off injured on about 70-odd minutes. I did my ankle, broke my ankle. And we were 2-1 down at the time. And we scored two late goals. Steenie and Danny Wilson scored two late goals. We were winning 1-0. Went 1-8, and Dibs then, they scored again to make it 2-1, and Dibs then saved the penalty. It made it 3-1 and probably game over. And it basically changed the game. Andy Dibble save. He got man of the match, deserves his so, because...
That's why I sent the text, didn't
I? Yeah, we were under severe pressure. So it was a toss of a coin between him and Brian Steen, who got man of the match, because Steenie scored two. And obviously Steenie got that late winner in the 93rd, 94th minute, and I think we just about deserved to win that cup final, but it was a brilliant game.
Did the cup run, all these cup runs, affect your league form?
No, we that was 88 and we finished the league. I think we finished about halfway up the league. Mm. I think so. I'm not really sure the position we were in, but I have that belief about if you keep winning, you just keep playing and you keep winning, and winning games is a brilliant recipe, you know, then mentality-wise and stuff and all that.
And that's the year that you got in the England squad?
Yeah.
And the bonus of that is, obviously, if there is a bonus of breaking your ankle, you can just sit there and people have got to fetch your drinks, haven't they? You know, celebration. I'll have another one. Ankle up and that ice on.
How did you get your medal? Did you have to hobble up?
I didn't. My ankle swelled up and I was all right. I just didn't feel that bad. Swelled up and it was Tony Adams. The ball's come up. He's a clever footballer, Adams was, and all that. Now and good lad, Tony, and he's like just gone bosh and he's nudged me and my ankle went. It was just a little jerk of my ankle and I couldn't run. So it was just a bit of cute play by Adams.
Clever footballers kind of regarded differently now.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Clever footballers now, getting in a pocket. Yeah. Yeah. Getting in and all. Back then it was,
little nudge, break his ankle.
It was a brilliant day, obviously, and we all ended up in the Savoy.
Good celebrations.
Yeah.
Was that planned? Were you going to be going to the Savoy anywhere, or was it?
Yeah, Fozzie got on the stage down at the Savoy and all that. All the wives and girlfriends and family were there. It was a brilliant night there. Brilliant night, yeah.
Back to the England call-up, was that... Because it's always, you know, in the papers and stuff, you're getting linked with call-ups and what have you. Was it out of the blue for you, or...?
I didn't know I'd get called up. You know, the competition in those days was unbelievable. I mean, the centre-forwards that were knocking around then was quite phenomenal. And to break into it, I was really pleased. And I'll never forget the game. It was Birmingham away. We beat them 2-0, I scored two. And on the Sunday, I got a call saying, you're getting called up. And I was in the squad for a long time, but I never really got any games. I was on the bench for about 7, 8, 9 games, but I never got called up to play. I remember we played Colombia once at Wembley, and they were brilliant, but you knew what the score was going to be. It was either England going to win 1-0 or it'd be 0-0. And they don't really score goals. All they want to do is keep the ball. And I thought, I don't really want to go on there.
This is not the cap that I want.
I don't really want to go on there. I don't want to be chasing them around and all that. So I think we were winning 1-0. It was 0-0. And there was me, Tony Adams, Peter Reid, and it's not true, but Bobby Robson turned around and we ducked down because he didn't want to go on. Then I got my chance against Israel, out in Israel. Clive Allen came off, I went on.
Proudest moment?
Oh, that was my proudest moment was when I made my full debut for England, Denmark. And basically that a win. Or he'd have got the bullet, Bobby, you know. And he was a Brilliant man, Bob. Absolutely brilliant. He used to call me Ray all the time. Hey, you're right, Ray. I said, Bob, my name's Mick. He said, not a problem, Ray. But no, lovely guy, lovely fella and all that. And great coach, great man. And I remember those words he said to me. He said, we're going to start with you today, Mick. And I went, whoa. And we were all in a circle at Bisham Abbey. And he actually picked the most experienced league who'd played a lot of league games. And me and David Rowcastle made our debut that night. So we won 1-0.
Straight on the phone to the family?
Yeah. TC was at the game, yeah. So
who else was in that? Or the strikers? I can't...
Clive
that
Allen.
Era.
Clive Allen,
Gary Lineker, Peter Beasley, Tony Cotty, Mark Aitley, Kerry Dixon. That was about it, really. But good players, you know what I mean? Beasley's my hero, Beasley. Absolutely pleasure to work with and be on the same pitch with him. He's a legend.
Did you make your debut the same day as Gazza?
Yeah, it's really strange that is. I got substituted in that Denmark game. I came off and Tony Cotty went on. And on that game, Gazza made his debut, yeah.
Good wingman on a night out, I imagine. For fun and games.
Oh, brilliant.
Childish games, yeah. I reckon.
Oh, lovely fellow. Now I knew Chris as well, Chris Waddle, yeah. From playing at Newcastle. So we stuck together, me, Gazza and Waddler. Just stayed on the training pitch. You could do that in those days. You just stay out on the training pitch and train and do whatever you want to do. And like nowadays, the sports science will drag you in. And so it was really, it was brilliant times, absolutely brilliant times.
Did you realise straight away how good a player you were, Gazza?
Well, we were in Switzerland, and when you're a player, you don't watch players, do you? And Gazza had obviously broke into the Newcastle team, and he hadn't made his debut. We hadn't played against them. And we were watching the under-21s the night before we played in Switzerland. And I said to Waddle, I said, who's that? And Waddle said, oh, that's Gazza. He said, he'll be with us soon. I went, well, he went on. He was outstanding. So everyone knew how good he was. You could see how good he was. And the following week, he got called up to the first team. And... genial and all that, you know, but still, he's a bit genial, absolutely genial. Trained hard, in the gym afterwards, sit-ups, press-ups, in the gym, whatever you wanted to do, extra work and all that, you know. Totally committed, totally devoted to football.
And did he come in like a wrecking ball like he ended up being?
No, he wasn't like that in those days. He was just a cheeky Geordie lad, you know, and all that, you know, and just a bit mental and all that. And Bobby loved him, absolutely loved him, adored him, you know. Bobby Robson adored him because of his ability and all that. And we all knew he was the rising star.
So your proudest moment was your England full debut?
Yeah.
Second proudest signing for Sunderland? That is a question, I'm not telling you.
I was a proud man when I signed for Sunderland. I mean, my team, my hometown.
Was it a bit of closure then? You know, when you said they didn't sign you at a young age. When you signed, were you like, I waited a long time for
Probably the wrong time for me to go to Sunderland. I was at Chelsea in 92. And I was 31, 32. Probably not at the right age for me to go there. But it was an opportunity I couldn't have turned down. And I just had to go and experience it, you know, to play for my hometown. And the experience of signing for Sunderland was too much for it to turn down. You know, yeah. Terry Butcher was the manager. The team was struggling in the championship down the bottom of the league, and fortunately we stayed up, but I'd left by the end of the season. I didn't stay that long. My son was involved in an accident down south. So my son was about 3 or 4. He was involved in an accident, and I said to Terry Butcher, I said, look, I need to be down south in this time, and fair play to him, the club, and all the board and all that. Now they just said, yeah, Mick, you're free to do what you want, really. So they were good in that way. That's why I got so much respect for the football club and the people there, you know.
Would you have played with Butcher? England or not?
Yeah, I played against him a lot. Good player, Terry.
Did you get him?
No, he's a big lad, Butcher. He's a big lad, Butcher. He was too cute, Butcher.
I know you went to watch Sunderland as a young lad, but were you still, as you carried on playing through your career, did you still go and watch them?
I went as often as I could. If I was in the area, I went to watch them here. I followed them in London, if they were in London. If I was there, if I could watch them.
What, Wembley?
I've been to every Wembley appearance, apart from 1937. Where I wasn't born. Every time Sunderland have been at Wembley, I've been to every game.
What was Wembley like? You used to go, was it Andy King?
Yeah, me, Andy King, and my brother-in-law, Davey Hull, who, God bless them both, are not around anymore. Davey died only a couple of months ago. King left us about 7 years ago. Dave come down for the cup final in 92, Liverpool versus Sunderland. And Kingy, who's a real good mate of mine, and when he come from Everton to Luton, George Wood used to look after him. He was a bit of a minder, because Kingy was a bit of a nightmare. He's one of those who could cause trouble anywhere, you know, and he'd cause trouble anywhere. And he needed someone to look after him. And I was given that responsibility to look after him. So me, Kingy and Davey all went into London, watched the football, and we ended up in a pub in Maida Vale. And it was full of Sunderland fans. The guy who run the pub was from Sunderland, from Farringdon. And they run the pub and all that. Went upstairs, had a few beers. My brother-in-law went out with a few lads who we knew who worked on the taxis. My brother-in-law was a taxi driver. So all of a sudden, there's a punch-up. And I go, here we go. There's a punch-up over there. So my brother-in-law comes towards me and he's got cuts all over his face and all that now. So we drag him out, get him dragged out. So me and Kingy get him downstairs, get him down this, like down a double staircase into this lounge opposite. So we're in there and literally 5-10 minutes later, about 5 or 10 Sunderland fans, about 10 Sunderland fans come running down the stairs into the lounge and start kicking the fuck out of us. So whack, and we were like lion tamers with the chairs. I was like a lion tamer with the chair against the wall and all that, beating them off, and we getting a good beating. Anyway, I was on the floor. The last thing I ever remember, I was on the floor getting booted. Took a boot and took that and took a whack, and we eventually somehow me, Kingy and Dave got outside. And got outside. And upstairs they were all at the windows, and there was a little balconies up there, and they're all shouting down at us and all that, we're going to kill you, we're going to do this and all that. And Davey said to me, he said, I've shit myself. I said, no, you'll be all right. He said, no, I've shit myself. Then I lost it, and I swear I got a turnaround, all up with the balcony and all, and I actually knew some of the lads. I went to school with them. And they were going, Arford, we're going to kill you. King, we're going to kill you. Oh, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, and all that. And I went, you're gonna what? And they were, I'd lost it then. And Kingy's like, come on, let's go. I said, no, we're not going anywhere. Come on, let's get out of here. And I went, hey, you, any three of you, send your best three down. Any three, and I'll bother who is, send your best three down. I'm looking at someone, I recognise him. I said, send your best three down. Any fucking three, send them down. Kingy's nudging me, he went, mate. I said, what? He said, make it two.
Did three come down?
No, we just left.
We had loads of people asking about whether you scored an own goal on purpose.
I did, yeah. Yeah. That's just to appease all the Luton fans.
Sorry, Derby fans.
Just for some context for those who don't know.
It was a free kick out there again. It was on the plastic pitch, and I was playing for Derby then, and I was in that, you know, that hole they put you in, the hole where you got to defend and you're free to head the ball. And I've gone to head it, and I skimmed off the top of my head, and Shiltz was in goal, and Shiltz couldn't get off the ground at that time, you know. He was at that age where he couldn't jump anymore. And it just floated over his head. He was in no man's land and floated over his head. And
that kept Luton up?
That kept Luton up, yeah.
And so you'd been at Luton for 6 years, gone to Derby, scored an own goal, kept him up,
yeah.
And then went back, and they made £125,000 profit. That's a double agent in a bit of a
second one. I've been the nunchucks. If you didn't have that thing on your head,
maybe,
you'd have cleared that.
The bump. Yeah.
It's still there now, Chris. You can feel it now, yeah.
So an easy decision, come back to Luton. Sometimes you think, oh, I don't know if I'm going to go back to a club or...
Yeah, I had a passion for the football club. I really liked it. I enjoyed my time when I played here. Came back in the 91 season, just before the Premier League started. Unfortunately, we were relegated that season when I came back. We just couldn't get out of it. Last game of the season, we had to win. Notts County, I think we got beat 2-1 and we got relegated. We haven't been in the Premier League since.
If you remember, do you know when you came back with Derby, what kind of reception did you get?
Oh, good. They've always, honestly.
As soon as that goal went in.
You got mayor next year.
No, the fans here are really knowledgeable and all that, you know, and they know if, for instance, when I went to Chelsea and when I went to Derby, you know, they were getting good money, and I mean, there's an opportunity for a footballer to go and improve himself, play for a better team. And the fans here have been, the fans, in my opinion, are the best in the country. All the ups and downs they've had, and the way they've been to me over the last few years is like incredible.
Yeah.
They've been brilliant, and I can't thank them enough.
Is it rather you, Man United, in for you?
I've spoken to Alex Ferguson about this. Obviously, it was in his book that he made an offer to David Pleat, who was the manager here, to sign me when United were going for the league, and he just thought his team needed to go a little bit more direct into a target man because of the state of the pitch. And he believes, believe it or not, he thought if he'd signed me, he might have won the league.
So that would have been in 92 then, when Blackburn won it?
I think it might have been, yeah. And but you don't, in those days, you didn't find out it was manager to manager.
Yeah.
I mean, if it had been nowadays, I'd have been a Man United player.
Have you spoke to Pleat about this?
I've spoken to him about it, and he's...
yeah, he was up against the wall.
I spoke to Pleat about it, but he keeps making excuses about it.
That must have had to piss you off, eh?
It does piss you off a little bit when you feel you got an opportunity to play for the, arguably the biggest club in the world, and they were on the up at the time and flying, and just the opportunity to play for them, you know, would have been magnificent. And to actually think that Alex Ferguson wants to sign you is brilliant, you know.
I'm thinking he's lucky to be here, Pleat. Or at least have his teeth. I mean, very minimum, a couple of teeth. That.
When do you think you were at your peak?
Probably here, Luton, when I was in the England squad.
88?
Yeah, 88, around that era. I was scoring, as I said, I didn't realise that, top goal scorer for three, four years, was it?
Mm, yeah.
And probably then, yeah, playing good football, enjoying myself.
Was there certain referees that you could butter up and get in the rear before games and stuff? Because we mentioned the dark arts that used to go on off the ball and stuff. Could you, like, we used to get told to call them by the first name, you know, just to get on a good term with them?
Yeah, there was, I mean, you got to know their names because there wasn't that many referees knocking about years ago. And one instance I remember playing for Derby and actually playing against Luton. It was the first game of the season. And George Courtney was the referee. George is from the northeast, so I said, "All right, George, how are you? All the best today and all that and everything." And so the ball's gone across to Mel Sage. You remember Mel Sage, the fullback? I've run across, as you do as a centre forward, left your foot there. He's kicked the bottom of my foot. Ball's gone forward. He's rolled around in pain, and George Courtney's come running over. And I got up, turned around, and went, "Oh, sorry about that, George." He said, "All right," and he's gone, "Bosh, red card." I went, "George, it's 2 minutes in the game, red card." He said, "What are you doing?" All the Derby bench had jumped up, Roy McFarlane and Arthur Cox and all them. They helped get me sent off. And I said, and you just think and all that. And now you just think, well, he's from the North East. I thought he might do me a favour.
Give me one.
Yeah, give me one. Give me one, at least give me one. But the funny thing was, on the night time, I used to ring my mum after every game and all that. I said, "Mum, all right, are you okay?" She said, "Yeah, I'm fine, yeah." She said, "Oh, Michael," he said, "I thought you scored the first goal of the season when your pitcher come up on grandstand." He said, "But you got sent off." "You're the first person to get sent off." I said, "Yeah, I'm really sorry," and all that.
apologising to your mum.
To your mother,
I'm
yeah,
so
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
How many red cards did you have? Do you remember?
I think I had about 11 or 12, yeah, quite a few, yeah. Some of them stupid, some of them silly. Some of the things you got away with, obviously, you couldn't do it nowadays.
Do you think you could play now, though?
Pardon?
Do you think you could play nowadays?
It's a brilliant question, and the answer I'll give you is what Graeme Souness said Do you think they could play in our era, the players today? I'm not sure they could.
I think they struggle with the pitches as much as anything.
Because of the pitches, the physicality. I think you'd adapt to nowadays. I mean, I'm not saying it's a lot easier. It's a lot because of the ball and the pitches. The ball moves a lot quicker. Hey, footballers don't move as quick, but it's just the ball moves quicker. And I think if you've got good technique, you can hold the ball up, you can get hold of it, and you can pass, and you've got a little bit of vision and all that. I think you could quite easily adapt to today's game, yeah.
He's brought the defensive forward back, hasn't he? Weghorst, Man United.
Oh, not half.
He can put a tackle in.
It's the main attribute, to be fair, isn't it? I mean, fucking crap. Who the fuck gets a move from Burnley to Man U, man? Fucking hell. He's only scored one in about fucking 18 games, hasn't he? I have to get a fucking Springer Spaniel in there.
let you talk about him. Yeah. I can't say anything.
When did you always want to be a coach?
Not really, to be honest with you. But I got to thank Joe Kinnear for that. I was coming to the end of my career and I did my Achilles. And I did my Achilles second game before I retired. And Joe said to me, look, there's a job there if you want to do the under-21s, Wimbledon. So Joe gave me the opportunity to do that, and whilst I was coaching the under-21s at Wimbledon, I just got all my badges and stuff and all that. Now, so it was brilliant for me. That club was brilliant for me. They got me onto the coaching ladder, and I got a lot to thank for Joe Kinnear.
Were you 38 when you finished at Wimbledon?
I was 38 and a bit. Yeah, yeah. I was getting on a bit.
So you retired in the Premier League, you scored your last goal as a 38-year-old in the Premier League. Not many done that. Were you doing your badges whilst you were still playing? Or
no, not really.
Did you just start?
I started when I got
when your
involved,
Achilles went.
When my Achilles went, and I needed an operation, and I just said, nah, not a 38. I don't need an operation, 38.
You didn't do your Achilles stamping on all Watford players, did you?
Yeah. I could have done quite easily, yeah.
You seen the video?
Yeah.
They score, they're all doing a celebration on the back. Mick just plows through, straight through the middle, stomping on them all.
I thought that would be the first question you ask.
I didn't know anything about that.
Oh, you need to have a look at that one, yes. That's why the Luton fans love me, for that reason only, I think.
Yeah. Did you make a beeline for it?
So what was it? It was an FA Cup game against Watford. I was playing for Wimbledon, and Tommy Mooney, I'm right behind Tommy, and he's hit this ball right in the top corner. And I'm right behind him going, oh, that's going in. So as I've turned around, they've about eight of them have slid in front of me and started doing like the dead hand thing, you know, the in the arm, and I just fucking walked straight through them. They were in my path and all that. And that's why should I go around there? And I was just walking back to the centre spot and I trampled all over them. it's worth looking at.
Brilliant.
See, anybody
he's
else
just squashed all the ants.
I think I squashed the ants. Like anybody else, people are getting up and having a bash.
You see some of them like, what's that? And then they look up, see Mick, and carry on.
I bet they felt stupid, didn't they? Just like that. What do we look like?
Especially with the six studs in the chest.
Did you get booked for that?
No, I can't remember. But I don't think I did. That was fun. That was, to be fair.
So were you ready for finishing then, or would you have carried on, do you think?
I was ready to go, and honestly, Joe and the football club, Wimbledon Football Club, were brilliant to me and gave me that opportunity.
Was it just a natural thing to, you know, when you started coaching and stuff, to come back to Luton?
No, not really, not at all, no, not at all. It was a case of Joe obviously had his heart attack and he then retired, took a while out, and he then got the job at Luton, and Joe invited me to come back to be assistant manager. At a brilliant time. The club had just got relegated, and we got them promoted straight away back into League One. And it was on the up, and all of a sudden, the club changed hands. We just got promoted. A guy called Gurney came in and got rid of us and just booted us out. And there was all uproar here and everything. And carnage, Joe and me. We offered our jobs back. We got sacked by mail, which is really strange. We offered our jobs back, which we never took. And that's when Mike Newell came in and did a brilliant job. And Mike got them promoted to the Championship.
That's when Wheeler played against them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's when Stevie Howard, Nico, Paul Underwood, Steve Robinson, Marlon Beresford, Brown Vine, and Carl Griffiths, Matty Taylor. Good team, Matty Spring. Good team.
Was it a difficult time, obviously, when there was the points deductions, looking at administration, but being brought in at the helm to see what had happened to your, you know, your club at the end of the day that you had such affection for?
Oh, it was a nightmare. I mean, and it was cruel, really. And are we still paying the price for it? No, not really. I think the experience has been brilliant. Brilliant for us as a football club, actually going into the conference and coming back and where we are now, how we've achieved and how we've built ourselves as a football club. We now think that punishment was good for us to go into conference and find out what it was all about. I came back when they were in League One and they got points deducted then went to League Two, then got 30 points deducted, which was practically impossible to keep them up.
How would you get the lads up for, you know, the lads have signed, you've got a 30-point deduction, well, and it's that, like, right, lads, roll your sleeves up.
Well, that's a real good question because we needed a big squad and we had to bring a load of players in and all that. And the only way you could bring the players in was telling them about this football club and what it's all about. I mean, people go, I ain't paying. They've got 30 points. They're guaranteed to get relegated. They'd be bottom of the league all season. You've got to win 15 games to get near getting off the table. Off the bottom
you're
of the
taking
table.
That relegation clause in your contract, aren't you, when you're 30 points down?
Yeah. So it was the big pull was the football club. Not the position we're in, it was actually the football club. And you had to sell the club to them and where we were going, what our vision was. And our vision was great because by then, the new owners now, 2020, who are absolutely brilliant, have got, they're all fans, very smart, intelligent, bright lads, all fans who run this football club now. And that's what we had to sell to the players. And the players came and bought into it.
And is that the year you got the Football League Trophy as well?
That year.
In the relegation year.
We got relegated to the conference, but we won it was then the Johnston Pay Trophy, which is the Football League Trophy, yeah. We beat Scunthorpe in the final.
What type of manager were you?
Different to probably what people think. I like to communicate with players, sit down with them, chat to them. I mean, I like them to be happy. I like them to have fun. I like them to work hard. But the biggest thing that I couldn't handle was when they didn't train properly. They didn't train properly. I just think, well, if you don't train properly, you ain't going to play properly. So those who didn't train properly didn't play.
Discipline? Heavy on the discipline?
Yeah, you've got to have discipline. I think you've got to have discipline. You can't improve, you can't get better if you haven't got discipline. You can't progress. I think without discipline, you're nothing, you know?
What kind of disciplinary action are you taking when your goalkeeper rings you and tells you he's been out for a few drinks with your star striker and you're not going to believe it, but Steve's been out with a nunchuck. He's got six, he's on for 10 stitches in hospital.
Oh, well, you don't tell anyone that. You keep that a secret, you know.
I banged it on the door. For it.
Did you train in martial arts, by the way?
No. Did a bit of boxing when I was a kid down at Lampton Street. So I was had a few fights as a junior, but not martial arts.
Yeah, where's that come from?
Casey.
Casey. Yeah.
Was that in London?
What a boy he was, Casey. Yeah.
This is MK Dons, isn't it?
Yeah, Casey. Yeah, great lad. We were out in London on a Christmas night out.
Would you go with the lads?
It was me and Wrighty and Wright, because Wrighty was working there as well. We had a night out. I forget what the pub was called. We were in this bar, and it was a beautiful bar. We were having a few drinks. And there was a couple of, three or four lads in the room with us, and we had a few Scotch lads, and they started singing a few rebel songs, I think, and all that. And these three or four lads took umbrage to it. So there was a bit of an uffle and a scuffle and a pushing and all that. And then a few of them got kicked out. But these three lads, four lads, stayed in the room. So me and Casey are stood at the bar having a drink, and Casey, stupid as he is, jumped over the bar, grabbed a bottle of wine and got it, and I went, what are you doing? What are you doing? He said, no, we'll be all right. And I said, I don't want a drink. I said, I had a pint there. So he's got a bottle of red wine, and the barman's come, he's gone, where'd you get that wine from? He said, you've been jumping over the bar. So Casey just anyway, you give in. Anyway, these three lads start kicking off and they looked at me across the end of the gun. And Casey said, I said, oh, we're in a bit of trouble here. We're in a bit of trouble. So I said, I took my coat off and I put my paint on the bar. I said, just watch me back, Casey, will you?
And what age are you here?
I must have been about, about 50. 48, 50, yeah.
Oh, so you're still in half-decent
shape? Yeah, I was in half-decent shape. And all. I was big then. I was a bit heavier then and I had a bit of weight on me. So I've took a run at them and I've gone and I've took off and I've caught them like Eric Cantona. I've caught one of them around the neck. So I've hit them and as I've hit them, all the boys have piled in. So then it's all gone quiet. We got out and that was it. That was the end of it, really. I never heard anything more. Then about 3 or 4 days later, the police turned up with the training ground at MK. Turned up with the training ground and they got me in the office and all that. And now, cut a long story short, I was in with the police and they said I had a meeting with the admin at the football club, then I had a meeting with the police. I said, tell us your story. So I told them the story where he jumped over the bar because it was on camera. He did that. I told him to stop. Then someone did that to me. I put my pint down, took my coat off, and I walked over just to have a chat with him. So he said, yeah, carry on. And I walked over, had a chat, then all of a sudden all the lads jumped in. So I said, oh, I hope we get away with that. So as we were chatting, they had it on camera. So they got the camera out, and he said, have a look at this then. So he saw me take my coat off, saw me walk across. Then just as I took off, someone took a picture. Someone in the bar took a picture. So there was a big flash, and he never saw me took off. He never saw me take off.
Someone's got a picture of you.
So they never saw me take off. So I went, oh, looks like I'm away with it.
It's a shame, isn't it?
I went, there's a shame, yeah. I said, it looks like I'm away with this one. So we just sat and got out and went to another bar. I've never been back to that bar since.
We had a few messages.
I didn't get that with the martial arts. So I was a bit slow there. I was a bit slow there. Yeah.
And about the kung fu kick. What's been the best dressing room / tunnel tear up you've had? Where you fought? Where you've got in back in the dressing room? You've wiped your blood. You've dusted your knuckles off and thought, fuck me, that were class.
Nunchucks back in bag.
I've never been in a fight one-to-one in the dressing room or in the tunnel, but I remember we played, I forget who we were playing, but I was at Wimbledon, and Jonah had this thing, Jonah Vinny, I call him Jonah. Jonah had this thing where if he'd had a poor game, he'd start off, you know. He'd kick off and he'd start picking on people just to cover himself up a little bit.
Other teammates or...?
His teammates, yeah, yeah. And he started on a few of us and all that, you know. And it's second nature. We loved it. And we didn't mind what he said because he's our captain, he's our leader. And more times than often not, he was on top form and he was always putting a good performance. But some days he'd kick off and all that, you know. And this one day, I forget who we were playing, but he started on Marcus Gale. Marcus Gale just gone bosh and he's caught him right in the chin. This was at half time. He's gone bosh right in the chin and all that, you know. So I've jumped up and I've got on top of Gailey's back. So I'm on his back and he's swinging me. I've got him round the neck and all that, and Jonah's throwing punches and Gailey's trying to get me off his back and he's swinging me all around the dressing room and all that, you know, and everything like that. So that's probably the most dangerous position I've ever been in terms of those two kicking off, because I mean, that would have been a quite handy fight and all that, you know. And I'd have put my money on Jonah, mind you. But.
So, like, when this is kicking off at half time, is Joe Kinnear just sat in the corner, like, crack on, lads?
Yeah, just let it all settle down, you know. Just let it. He'd seen it all before, and it happened a lot at Wimbledon in terms of like scrapping and pushing and shoving and. You're fucking useless shit today. And you got it out in the open and that's the way it was. And you're the better for it, you know.
Was everybody fine on the Monday morning?
Everything was fine. Listen, there's a few people who didn't like each other at Wimbledon in terms of what it stood for. Some people loved what it stood for. Some people didn't like what it stood for. Yeah.
Did anybody at Wimbledon
But behind the scenes, sorry to interrupt, behind the scenes at Wimbledon, it was really, really well... old cog and all that, you know, the preparation, the coaching. You know, you don't have the likes of Don Owen, Ray Arford there and Terry Burton and people like that if it's not a well-oiled machine behind the scenes. You know, it's a bit of a facade in front of it, but behind it, it was like clockwork, you know.
And did anybody think, I'm actually too good to, like, I'm too good to get tarnished with the Wimbledon brush? The crazy gang brush.
That's a good question, and there was a few who thought that, yeah, who didn't like it, who didn't really buy into it, but they were part of the team, and they had to go with it, you know. And Sam O'Mahon was a big part of it, you know. Sam had come down the training ground, and he'd be giving you 50 quid or whatever. He'd go in goal, and he'd take a penalty at you. if you save it, you get 50 quid, and it was just brilliant. You know, and he'd come down there with. He'd get tortured down there at times, you know.
Listen, did he not get picked on?
No, he did get picked on, yeah. We throw him in the water and everything, you know. We throw him in the bath and everything, yeah.
But no, this is the chairman.
Yeah, no, good. He absolutely loved it. He loved being part of it, you know. Absolutely loved being part of it.
We wanted to obviously talk about your work with Prostate Cancer UK. Obviously, you've had your own diagnosis a couple of years ago. You're still currently undergoing treatment.
Yeah.
Obviously been a tough period, I imagine. Have you found a lot of support within the football community? Because I imagine it's a period where you could find isolation.
Yeah, you do go to ground a lot of the times, you know, and you do go to ground and tucked away times and that, you know, and feel a bit sorry for yourself. But I was diagnosed, 2 years ago now, 2020. The question you asked, the support from the football club and the football supporters and the whole of Luton has been absolutely phenomenal, and I just cannot thank them enough. Support they've given me and what they've done for me, and I'm in awe of what the support I've had, and worldwide, countrywide. I mean, I've had lots of support from all different kinds of people, and I just like to thank everyone basically. But the fans here, when I was undergoing treatment and when I wasn't here, every game, home and away, sang my name, you know, and it was, like, so emotional. And I went to a game when I wasn't really going to go to a game, and I went to Forest away last season, and I'd never heard, and I started singing my name, and he go, whoa, what's going on here? And it's so emotional, and I just like to thank them for all they've done for me, you know.
And there is the fortune as well, haven't there? The club and the fans,
yeah, yeah.
30 grand.
Yeah, we raised a lot of money with Prostate FC and stuff and that, you know. And everyone's, I mean, they're just supporting me, and the challenges that they're going through to raise money for prostate cancer is amazing. And Prostate Cancer UK have been brilliant, and you know, they've set up a new arm now in Prostate FC, which gives you opportunity to do events for prostatecancer.uk and just raise awareness, which has been my aim since I was diagnosed.
I mean, we did the Barnes at Amsterdam, didn't we? Football, yeah. At Amsterdam, and it's inspirational, isn't it? Meeting the people that were on the trip, telling stories. Story, yeah.
I know, brilliant. Jeff Stelling's doing the walk that's coming up, 26 miles.
Everyone has a different story. And every story is different. No one is the same. It's unbelievable. And the journey you go through is tough, but sometimes it's really interesting and sometimes inspirational, you know. The people you meet in the hospital and who've gone through the same as you, and a lot of people are a lot worse than you. And it's inspirational, and it gives you inspiration from them, you know.
Support as well, I imagine.
Support's, you know, unbelievable. I met a guy in hospital there. It's really strange. I met a guy in hospital, and I can't remember his first name, but his surname was Berry. And we got chatting and all that, you know, and I said, you're not from round here. He said, oh, no, I was born in Manchester. I said, why does he live in Manchester, Birmingham? He said, oh, my father was a footballer. I went, how was he? I said, that's interesting. And I said, what was his name? I said, his name was Johnny Berry. I said, Johnny Berry? I said, what years did he play in? He said he played in the 50s, 60s and early 70s. I said, oh, so who you play for? He said he played for Birmingham, Man United, and he played for England. I went, England? He went, yeah, England and all that, you know. So I went, wow. And I said, I cannot remember his name. And he went, fucking exactly. He said, no one remembers Johnny Berry. That's what he said to me. He said to me, no one remembers Johnny Berry. I said, I'm really sorry. I apologise and all that. Man. But sorry about that. He said, that's why I'm writing a book. I said, I've written a book about my father. I said, okay, I'd love to get that. I said, is it on Amazon? He went, no, I'll bring you one in tomorrow. So he had to go then in for his treatment. He went in for his treatment. So I saw him the next day. Where's your book, Mick? I said, oh, that's brilliant. I never told him I was a footballer. And we got chatting again and all that and start chatting. And the next day he goes in for, I'll go for my treatment. Next day come out. I've started reading the book really good and all that, you know. And he said to me, what do you do? I said, well, believe it or not. He said, I'm an ex-footballer. And he said, what's your name? I told him. He went, oh, I remember that name. I remember that name. We got chatting again and all that, you know. And the bizarre thing was, I don't know what it is, it just stuck in my mind that you can meet anyone down there and everyone's got a lovely story. And I said to him, I said, what happened to your father? He said, well, after the Munich air disaster. I said, you what? He said, after the Munich air disaster, he retired. I said, what, your father's in the Munich air disaster? He went, yeah. He said, and that's why I had to write the book, because no one remembers him. So we go back to Man U for, you know, the get-togethers for the remembrance days and all that. And said, no one ever knows who Johnny Berry is, which is really strange and all that. So you meet some really interesting people on your journey and all that. You know, people who are really timid down there. I met a Scotsman down there who you think's got to be strong and tough and all that. You know, but he was in the right mess and all that. Just have a chat with him and you just relate each other's story and calm each other down. It's really, really overwhelming at times, the people you meet down there, you know.
And how are you now?
I'm in the middle of hormone therapy, which is 6 monthly injections, monthly visits to the hospital for the PSA test, which tells you where you are in terms of your numbers. My numbers are really good at the moment. I'm right in a good place at the moment. So hopefully in 9 months' time, when I come off all the medication, might get the all clear.
Were there any signs leading up to your diagnosis? Because obviously there's things online that I think they take 30 seconds to go through the symptoms and be able to realise the risk that you're at and the symptoms that are there.
A year before, I was in a position where the symptoms are you go to the toilet, you have a wee and it's slow and you come back out and you go back again. So you battle them forward to the toilet 2 or 3 times, where before you just need to visit once. Mm. In the night time, you're up 2 and 3 times a night. Sleep deprivation's terrible and all that. So, I mean, I'm up 3 or 4 times a night still. So that's big symptoms. And I went, my PSA was risen to about 6 or 7 when I first ever went there, and that was 4 years ago. And I was told, you've got some inflammation, but you haven't got cancer. And a year later, my PSA went up to about 48, 50, which is very high. So they know there's something going on there, and then they get straight back in. And so I'd had a bit of a scare early on.
Yeah.
Then they basically missed something before they found it.
Did you recognise that was a symptom pretty early, though? You know, when you're getting up for a piss all the time and things were happening. Did you recognise that and seek help for it? Or did you leave it and...
You don't want to know, really, sometimes and all that, you know. And I was due a PSA test and I left it about a month. And eventually I just went and got it done. Mm. And they got me straight in. Within 24 hours, I was in. It was unbelievable how quick the whoa, get him in.
So that's good to know. Yeah. Just that, like you said, to the toilet for people listening and watching.
And I'm really happy with my consultants, really pleased with them at UCLH. They're brilliant. And they've got a really good team behind me, and I'm really, really chuffed with the treatment and the support I've had from them, you know.
I know it's Wembley to Wickham that Jeff Stelling's doing the walk, 26.2 miles.
Wickham to Wembley, isn't it?
So I think we're going to put the link in the description if anybody wants to make a donation. We'll also put the link in there for kind of signs and ways that you can check yourself, which is important, isn't it?
Certainly is.
Have you settled down now with them nights out? No more nunchucks and bottles? What is a typical night out?
In London.
What, as a footballer's night out?
Yeah.
Yeah,
forget
it
now.
Okay.
Let's go back.
Well, there was two lads stood at the France car. Yeah? When these two patterns come walking in. So one of the lads said to the patter, do you fancy Nigel Spink? And she said, I'd love a Nigel Spink. So they went back to France car and he ordered two bottles of Mickey Mills. So two bottles of Mickey Mills. And he turned around to the Pat Hurd and he went, he said, oh, you've got a lovely Jimmy Case. He said, but you're a bit Alan Ball, aren't you? And she said, yeah, it's the Mark Hughes I'm wearing. So his mate said, listen, I'm just fucking off to the John Fashionable from Atlantis. So his mate fucked off to John Fashionable from Atlantis. He turned around to Pat Hurd, he said, do you fancy coming back to John Pratt for a cup of Bill Roffey? He said, I'd love to come back to John Pratt for a cup of Bill Roffey. He said, listen, I'll get on the Brian LeBarn and order Neil McNabb. So he gets on the Brian LeBarn, orders Neil McNabb, and they go back to the John Pratt. So when they get back to John Pratt, they go through the front door and he says, why don't you have a sit down on the Peter Benetti? So she said, that's my favourite, the Peter Benetti, my guy. That's my favourite, the Peter Benetti. So why don't you have a sit down on the Peter Benetti? So she sits down on the Peter Benetti. He goes in the Peter kitchen. He comes out with two cups of Francis Lee. He puts them on the coffee table, sits down next to the Pat Hurd. And he said to the Pat Hurd, he said, why don't you come a bit Alan Shearer? So she comes a bit Alan Shearer. And he said to her, he said, any chance of a Teddy Maybank? And the Pat Hurd said, oh, yeah, I'll give you a Teddy Maybank, no problem. And he went, oh, this is Glen Oddle. This is a Glen Oddle, I'm going to Davy Puckett. And he said, listen, why don't we get in the Bobby Moore? So they get in the Bobby Moore. They're just about to start and all that. And she said to him, he said, are you one of Rick Eel? She said, no, I'm not Rick Eel. He said, you'll have to wear an Adrian Heath. So he puts his hand down there. He went, oh, he said, you've got a lovely Roger Hunt. He said, and he puts his head down there. He said, but oh, Colin Bell's a bit down there. Don't it? And she said, yeah, I've got a touch of Ian Rush. That'll not get cut, will it?
Yeah. As you say that, I'm telling Wickham out in my head. I think I've got about 80% of them. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Top man,
much appreciated, and good luck with you. All the best.
All right, yeah.
Thank you very much.
No, pleasure. Cheers. Absolute pleasure. I hope it went well, yeah.
Peter Benetti.
Yeah.